This RFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Right, hello New Zealand, welcome to another episode of Turn the Page. My name is Mark Pacey from the Wairarapa Archive, and today, actually, we've got four stories for you today. I was digging through all the ones I've written in the past, and there's a couple of shorter ones that I did there. Obviously, I found a photo that I thought was very interesting. I thought we've got to do a story on that, but there wasn't enough stories, so we did a rather exaggerated caption on that one. So yes, we're going to start with those two. One is about military history, which not very surprising. The other one is about Spider-Man, which maybe is a little bit surprising. So in May of 1942, the Pacific War had been going on for 6 months. The Japanese seemed unstoppable and were winning victory after victory. In a short period, they'd advanced a long way from the Japanese home islands and were now threatening New Guinea. They decided on naval action against Port Moresby and had planned to land several thousand troops there. But the Americans had learned of this and, together with their Australian Navy, sailed to meet them. This battle would go down in history as one of the most important naval battles of the war. On paper, it looked like a Japanese victory. The Japanese lost one light carrier, one destroyer, and three minesweepers, whereas the Americans lost a fleet carrier, a destroyer, and an oiler. Fleet carriers were the most valuable vessels in the modern navy, and sea battles would be determined by them. The fact that the Japanese couldn't land troops meant it was a tactical but costly victory for the Allies, and would be forever remembered, and especially in Australia, who had come so close to having the Japanese camped on their doorstep. 25 years later, commemorative celebrations were held, and two American vessels sailed to New Zealand to take part. The USS Maddox and the USS Gridley arrived in Wellington, and their crew disembarked. These were impressive machines of war. The USS Gridley was a missile destroyer and had its arsenal two surface-to-air missiles, anti-submarine rockets, and two triple torpedo mounts and two twin rapid-fire guns. As part of the welcoming, the naval men got to our shores. Many were allowed to spend the night here, and a lucky 36 got to spend the night in Masterton as guests of the Naval League. It was not the first time that American naval men had visited Masterton and would certainly not be the last. New Zealanders appreciated what our brothers in arms did for us during the war, and since the war's end, Masterton and Wairarapa would be visited by many of them. Unfortunately for the crews of the USS Maddox and USS Lee, their night was soon up, and it was time to board their ships and head back out to sea again. So that was the military history one. Again, it's about the Battle of the Coral Sea. I'm not sure if I said that in there. Some of the military people out there goes like, yes, I know what you're talking about. Others would be like, what battle is he talking about? Battle of the Coral Sea, very, very important one. In the late 1970s, Spider-Man was having all sorts of adventures, and these were the subject of a television show. In 1979, some of these episodes were compiled into a movie, the second of a trilogy, which was shown in theatres outside of the United States and eventually shown in New Zealand. This was 25 years before Sam Raimi's trilogy of films came out, starring Tobey Maguire. In these original films, it was Nicholas Hammond who took the lead role. Hammond had previously appeared in Lord of the Flies and The Sound of Music, and in later years would feature in 80s television shows Dallas and Magnum P.I. Spider-Man Strikes Back saw the superhero take on the villainous Mr. White, who planned to hold America ransom with stolen plutonium that he had fashioned into a bomb. The bomb was set and was going to explode. While the president was giving giving a speech, Spider-Man was able to arrive with just moments to spare and defuse the bomb. But his nemesis, Mr. White, escaped and swore vengeance against the superhero, swearing, "We will meet again." Wairarapa children were thrilled to have Spider-Man come to their area, and when he showed up in Masterton on August 27, he was swamped by young fans, many who had brought things for him to sign. When a Times Age photographer showed up to take some photos, the superhero struck his spidery pose for the camera. The central shopping area was a hive of activity as children followed the masked star around as he promoted his new film. But it wasn't long before he had to say goodbye to his new friends and move on to the next towns before leaving our shores and off for another adventure. Spider-Man did return the following year to our theatres in the concluding film of his trilogy in Spider-Man: The Dragon's Challenge. I haven't actually seen those original ones. I imagine they will be quite entertaining. All right, so this is a brilliant idea. Again, I'm not taking credit for it. Someone much smarter than me came up with it. is with the music. We're playing two pieces of music and one piece of the original score from one movie, but I don't tell you what that is until the end. So we're gonna. I've tried to pick some of the more obscure stuff, because if we suddenly played the Ghostbusters theme, it's like, I wonder what movie he's been. So yeah, we're going more obscure. So this is from. I do really like this movie. It's one of my favorites. This is on the soundtrack. It features briefly in the movie, and that's all I'm going to say about it. I will actually say it's called. This won't give it away. It's called Power Play, and it is by Eddie and the Tide. And there you have it. There should be a little clue in there. The extreme saturation of saxophone would tell us that that is from the 1980s. That's all the clues you get at the moment. So this was an article I wrote. I think it was from one of the magazines. It might have been the Memories magazine. So mastered in the 1960s, was keen to show off what it had, and public relations officer Len Bergman made sure the rest of the country would take notice of us. Len Bergman was very good at his job. He'd been a public relations officer in Auckland for 10 years before he decided to move on to bigger and better things, so he moved to Masterton. One of the first events he helped organise was the Industry's Fair, an exhibition of all things made in Wairarapa. This had been running since before he had arrived, but he took it to another level. But Len had much grander ideas than an exhibition of local industry. He was planning Masterton's answer to the Olympic Games, but with a unique twist, including events that would never appear at the Olympics, but would be greatly entertaining nonetheless. In 1963, plans were underway for the first Golden Games. In a feat of remarkable preparation, the Games kicked off in October, with an opening ceremony complete with torch, which was relayed to Queen Elizabeth Park, where it was used to light the flame, lit by explorer and friend of Edmund Hillary, Peter Mulgrew. Then followed 2 weeks of events that could only be described as varied and entertaining, starting with the athletics. There were school kids on one end, to the sporting greats of racing in the Golden Mile on the other. In an upset, New Zealand legend Peter Snell didn't win his race. He didn't even come in second, settling for third, behind New Zealand runner John Davies and Australian Ron Clark. In between the expected events like swimming, tennis, judo and fencing, there were some truly oddball events. Chess was one of the featured highlights of the games. Champion chess players Otvin Sadapu and Rodney Phillips faced off in the War Memorial Stadium. While the two men battled it out over a chessboard wasn't quite so interesting to watch, what was happening on the stadium floor certainly was. As each chess master made a move, this was replicated by a full-size human player in costume on a giant chessboard in the centre of the floor. As each player was killed, staff from St John's Ambulance rushed forward to take away the fallen on stretchers. There was also a race set up in the swimming pool of a different kind. Regular swimmers versus underwater in full scuba gear. On the night, the scuba guys were either spectacularly on form or the surface swimmers were not having a good night, as it was a whitewash for the underwater team. The games finished after 2 weeks and nearly 40 events. They returned 2 years later, but to lesser fanfare. It was intended for the Golden Games to be a regular event, held every 2 years, but it was not to be. The turnouts for the 1965 Games are not as strong as in 1963, and any future Games were cancelled. It was a shame, because in 1965 they took the uniqueness even further, with a gridiron complete with cheerleaders and the most brilliant game ever, motorcycle football. In a two-a-side match, keen soccer players attempted to score goals and outmanoeuvre each other while riding motorbikes at the Solway Showgrounds. One side was led by Mr. Golden Games himself, Len Bergman. At the time of the Golden Games were a source of fun and entertainment, but as time moved on, the games became just a memory of those that were there. The next generations missed out on the spectacle of the games and were also never got the chance to know Len, who did so much for the town in such a short period. He moved to Taupo after the lukewarm reception to the 1965 games to take up a role as public relations officer there. The Golden Games were a brilliant event and a real highlight in Masterton sporting history. How many other smaller towns can boast they held such varied and sizeable events as we did? Christchurch held the Commonwealth Games in 1974 and are remembered fondly for that. But Masterton hosting the Golden Games not once but twice was fading from memory. I did do a little follow-up there because, like I said, I did this around the time that I did my Golden Games books. I'm not going to plug my stuff on the air. Plus, those two books are now well out of print. But if you want to learn more about the Golden Games, please consult your local library, and they'll get you the books. They'll be there. All right. So the next song we're going to play, I'm actually not going to say what it's called because that'll give too much away. But this is from the same soundtrack. It appears in the movie quite prominently, unlike the last song. So I'm just going to play it, and then afterwards we'll say what it is. I've actually been wanting to play this song on my show for about 2, maybe 3 years, and I'm finally going to do it. So this is an important event for me. I'm finally going to fulfill something that I've been wanting to do for quite a while. So here we go. Thank you.
spot to light my way. I want you out, I want you in. This is our crime, this is our sin. But I still believe, still believe. Through the pain, through the grief, through the light, through the storms, through the cries, through the wars. Don't cover me until you're tossed on the waves. When the darkness comes, feel the grief. But I still believe through the cold, through the heat, through the rain, through the tears, through the crowds.
And there we have it. So that is I Still Believe by Tim Capello. You may not know his name, but you know him if you've heard any of the late, great Tina Turner's music from the 80s. You've heard him. He was her saxophone player. So he was in this said film, and he actually, the scene, he's actually performing that song live on stage. He's known for his physique, which he took great pride in. So quite often when you search for him, you won't find it under his name. But if you type in buff guy from said movie, there he is. He's still active. He's still playing the saxophone. There's a website called Cameo where you can pay money to celebrities and they'll record, you know, a 30-second to 1-minute video, and they'll dedicate it to whoever you want. and you can get him to do it, and he will do it with his saxophone, and he'll, you know, this is for this person, and he'll even sometimes play you a little bit. So he's very famous for that one particular role. I mean, he's very talented and everything else, but that one role that sort of cemented his legacy. All right, on to our last story already. On Saturday, September 30, 1961, the Solway Showgrounds were the place to be. The Police organised an event which had grown since it was first established in 1948, when it was a football match accompanied by a pipe band performance. 13 years later, the event now required a fair bit of planning to pull off. Saturday rolled around, and so too did the clouds and the rain, but this would not put a damper on the events, which still went ahead. Starting with some sporting events, and a school relay was held with several schools taking part. The runners braved the constant deluge while spectators looked on. There was a danger of the track in the form of water and mud, which resulted in several of the participants finding themselves flat on the ground. In the end, it was Lansdowne School which emerged victorious. Soccer match was set to follow, with Wairarapa taking on the Wellington Schoolboys team, but the visitors did not turn up, so a second team of Wairarapa players was formed, and the game was still played. After soccer, it was rugby's turn, and Mercantile took on Public Services. It did not look good for Mercantile, who were down 5-0 at half-time. But as full-time it was called, it was 8-all, as the two teams made their way off the grounds and airplane that had been suspiciously circling overhead swooped down. Pitching down and then levelling off, the plane opened its Bombay doors and dropped its arsenal. The showground's oval erupted in pandemonium. The plane's payload was of the wrapped and toffee kind. And one of the more adventurous lolly scrambles in Masterton's history, the Oval was a hive of activity for 10 minutes as children searched for every sweet morsel. A crane was brought into the Oval, a rather odd thing to have at a gala. The line was lowered, and then a strange thing happened. A person in a straitjacket was hoisted up by their feet and suspended over the Oval. And just 2 minutes later, they had freed themselves of their constraints. There was no need for panic, as this was not a real prisoner, but the escape artist known only as Indana. The go-karts faced the same problem as the relay runners, with many losing traction on the wet surface but still providing great entertainment to the crowd. The Royal New Zealand Air Force put on a display showing off large models of American missiles and projecting films onto the outside of a canvas. A baby show was also held, with only the bravest infants taking part. The conditions had meant that this was one of the least attended baby shows in recent years. The top two places were claimed by Wairarapa youngsters, with the good strong name Mark Richards was run up and Mark Lucock was crowned a champion baby. Go Marks. Galas are never complete without the sideshows, and the Police Charity Day would not disappoint. Coconut Shy, Darts, Skittles and Penny Shy took their places alongside the hot dog stand and raffle wheel. Tug of War contest was also held, with Te Nui proving that they were the strongest of them all, beating out the police team. The Police Charity Day would not be complete without a police event, and the best of the force was out on display. The police dogs were put through their paces, leaping through hoops and hurdles and even an 8-foot wall, which they traversed with ease. Nearly 3,000 attended the event, and it would have been higher if the weather had been more suitable. Although it did have the effect of boosting hot dog sales, the sausage on a stick proving to be the fifth highest income earner over the whole gala, with sales of the equivalent of close to $1,500 today. That is a lot of sausages. Okay, on to our last piece of music now, and because this is the score, this is the only piece of the score that appeared on the soundtrack. As far as I know, the rest of the soundtrack has never been officially released. People have made their own versions of it where they play the movie and they use, I guess they use AI or something, and they remove all of the ambient background sounds and all of the dialogue and just leave the music. And it sort of works, but every once in a while there's a sound effect thrown in there and it just doesn't quite sound right. And it's not official, so I'm not going to play that on the air. So this is the official piece of music. I can tell you what, you know, what it's called and who it's by, because it's not going to give anything away either. This is The piece of music is called To the Shock of Miss Louise. I never actually worked out who Miss Louise was. As far as I know, there's no one called that in this movie. And it is by the great Thomas Newman. We've played quite a bit of his stuff before, but this is one of his earlier works. It's a very short piece of music. It's a minute 34, I think, is how long that was. So that is all from a movie set in Santa Carla. It's the famous line, notice anything unusual about Santa Carla? It's a pretty cool place if you're a Martian or a vampire. That is from the 1987 film The Lost Boys. Brilliant, brilliant film. It was the one that sort of revolutionized how vampires were portrayed in film. Before that, it was all the Bela Lugosi's and Christopher Lee's, which is fine. They're great actors, but they're a bit older. So this is the one that brought it right back and made them a bit younger. In theory, if there was no Lost Boys, there probably wouldn't have been a Twilight. So there you go. That is us done for the week. I'm going to try and hobble back to work and not get rained on again. Briskly walked here. I didn't run because it's wet. You don't run in the wet, especially on the roads. But I briskly walked here, and it'd take a couple of minutes to actually get my breath back. I'm not as fit as I used to be. So look after yourselves. Again, if you're going to head out, check the weather. It's meant to be getting fine. I think by tomorrow it's meant to be okay. But if you're going to go out, you know, today, maybe take an umbrella or a coat because it's not very nice out there at the moment. So I have to wander back. But there's plenty of shelter along the way. I'm sure you'll be fine. So look after yourselves. We will see you in a week's time. Catch you later.